You don't have to wait till you're in your car to hear what Cap and J-Hood are talking about. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000. That's why I see emergency. Shot. No shot. With Cap and J-Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I see.
It is time for Shot or No Shot right here on the Cap and J-Hood Morning Show. JD is in for Cap. So glad that you're with us here. Hope that you're having a great Thursday morning. And Shot or No Shot is brought to you by...
Shot or No Shot brought to you by PointsBet Sportsbook at Hawthorne Racecourse. PointsBet Sportsbook is now open. Download the PointsBet app now and then stop by Hawthorne Racecourse to register your account. Gentlemen.
All right. We've got Jeff. We've got Tyler. And by the way, JD, you heard my guy, Gavin East Chicago. I guess he's holding on, thinking he's going to get a different in the second appearance. That's not happening. but Gavin, he gave us a little A-Train. Did you hear a little A-Train?
I like that. I mean, talking about Walter, and then we talk about Neil Anderson.
Yes.
And then Anthony Thomas. The A-Train snuck in there. In 2001, Anthony Thomas was awesome for the Bears.
He really was. Now Jeff and I were going through some of these names here during the break. And so, like, if you're going to move Walter and Neil out, and Neil, by the way, was an All-Pro. We do remember. Like, it was seamless. Like, after Walter retired, Neil stepped in there and did a nice job. Who's next in that list now? Because we were talking about, like, a James Allen.
James Allen. What about Ultra back? Raymond had a great couple years.
I did some shows with Raymond Harris.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Forte's obviously one of the greatest running backs in franchise history. I mean, you can't talk about Walter and Neil Anderson without mentioning Matt Forte, who had an incredible run here. And then, David Montgomery isn't there yet, but, man, he's the best they've had since Forte by a mile. And you just wish that he would get the ball a little more.
Is that fair, Jeff? Like, best since Forte?
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen.
Listen, JD, you're JD on this show. I'm Jeff on this show.
I'm sorry.
No, I think JD's got it right. I do want to say, if we're going to throw A-Train, though, in the mix, I mean, we would be remiss if we don't at least mention the one great rookie season by Rashan Salaam. May he rest in peace.
Because yes.
That was a fun year as well, 95.
So where's Edgar Bennett in that spot, 98?
He's in the Packers Hall of Fame. That's where he's at.
Okay, so we don't put him. All right, so Rashan Salaam's a good name. Lewis Tillman. What about Lewis Tillman?
Lewis Tillman.
Yeah.
So I did admittedly black out during the John Fox years, so I might be forgetting someone from, 2015 to 2017.
I think we're still getting calls to bring back Jordan Howard, right?
Yes.
Oh, Jordan Howard. I forgot about Jordan
Indiana.
Howard.
Yes. Stand up.
Well, Indiana via UAB.
I love that. You got a little Matt Barkley, a little Jordan Howard, a little Cam Meredith, a little Al Alshon. I don't like Chicago. It's some good stuff there. A Logan Paulson at tight end. All right, Tyler, what do we have here?
All right. We've got our first true Thursday night matchup of the season. It is the Giants. It is the Washington football team. Oof. And Taylor Heinicke stepping in at quarterback tonight for Washington. So I ask you, shot or no shot, Washington actually has the quarterback advantage tonight.
Oh, don't tell Gettleman that. You're going to ruin his day.
We fell in love. We love our guy. With the white shoes and the Santa belt slacks, Gettleman. Oh, boy. You know what? Shot. How about that?
Oh,
I'm not a Daniel Jones guy. You know, because we've done shows around that draft, JD. You know that was a reach.
I can't do that to Dave.
Oh,
you broke
come
my
on.
Heart. You broke my heart.
Gettleman.
No shot. And by the way,
what?
Tyler, if the question was, are you watching this game tonight, Giants in Washington, my response would be no shot.
No shot.
What a terrible way to begin Thursday night football with these two also-rans.
Well, they thought that the Giants would be better by now. They did pull the nose up a little bit toward the end of the season, did they not? I mean, you just know, for me, I'm not a Daniel Jones fan. It's nothing against the kid, but when you try to make this comparison like he's the next Eli Manning, like maybe, but not with this outfit. Not with this outfit.
You're out the door, Eli. Eli, you're gone. We got someone better coming in.
Daniel Jones. You know what? Shot. I'll give Ron Rivera the credit. How about that? Go ahead, Tyler.
So the Dodgers clinched the other night and now might have to play in the wild card game for MLB. Shot or no shot, seeing either the Dodgers or the Giants, the first two teams to clinch an MLB playoff spot is good for baseball.
I'm going to say shot because I think having two teams like that in the same division, where you got two teams that are going to probably win 100 games, Jonathan, mm-hmm. I think that's great for Major League Baseball. So one of them just by default will be in the wild card. I think shot. I think it's a great thing. And just having the Giants and Dodgers together in that division, close to 100 wins, again, I think for Major League Baseball, that's a big score.
I've seen a lot of Dodger baseball this season, and I know maybe I should be getting rest instead, but, you know, what else is Miller and I going to talk about with baseball? Of course, we're going to watch Dodgers baseball. So, we've seen a lot of it so far this year, so it is good to see the Dodgers in the mix and also the Giants. You know, it's been very compelling, the National League. So I think it's really good for baseball. Listen, you know, I don't care about our New York friends, JD, that talk about the Yankees and Mets have to be good to help out the baseball. It's going to be better. No. Across the board, baseball could be good. As long as you get good baseball across the country, especially my White Sox, I'm totally fine with it.
Poor little baseball. You know, my Yanks are 8 games out, and I know the league is struggling right now. It's not struggling.
Not struggling.
I think baseball's fine.
All of Tyler's friends from New York just like, I don't understand this whole West Coast thing. I can't stay up. It's late. It's 10 o'clock. I got to go to bed. All this stuff. No,
how do you
man.
Think you see the 8:40 starts? Sometimes,
the 8:40 starts. Now, screw that, man. The good baseball, wherever it is great. Ask Jeff.
Max Muncy home run last night, Hoodie. 34th of the year.
JD, my friend Jeff Miller, I mean, he knows he's working the morning shift. He knows he's working it.
That's okay.
But he can't break the habit of watching, you know, great West Coast baseball. He can't go to bed.
So when Hoodie's prepping Cap every morning with his binky and his coffee and getting mm-hmm. him set and ready to go, like he says, part of the morning ritual, he's also looking over at me, and then he always, like, gives me a little bit of a, you know, he always shames me just a little bit, like how the Padres did last night, Jeff, because he could see the bags under my eyes.
Yeah, what about those A's? But that, even in the AL, the AL West is so much better.
Last night.
You know, I mean, seriously, with Houston and Oakland and Seattle, you want to talk about teams that are going to give the White Sox some trouble in the playoffs. I mean, I'm looking at the West. So where baseball's at this year, it's not my Mets are 3 games below 500. I know everyone's going to share my pain. No one cares about your Mets being 3 games below 500. I'm going to watch West Coast baseball.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
I mean, it's exciting, man. I mean, Dodgers and Padres, if I can stay up and watch that, I'm in. It's interesting to me. Watching the Giants is interesting because I need to try to scout and see who the White Sox are going to play in the World Series. Go ahead, Tyler.
So another baseball note here, and we are going to go to those New York baseball teams here, because did you see what happened in the Orioles and Yankees game yesterday?
What happened?
Ninth inning, umpire Tim Timmons asks the ground crew to leave, get off the field. He later said that he did not eject them, he just asked them to leave. So I ask you, is this a bigger, shot or no shot, is this a bigger ego move than anything Joe West has done?
That's a no shot. Joe West wants to be seen. I know that's Cap's buddy, and no surprise there that they're friends. Nonetheless, I would say that just trying to get the grounds crew off the field and kind of move them out of play, okay, he's doing his job. But Joe West, I mean, you talk about a grandstander. That guy wants to be seen. I find it funny, guys like Joe West get all this acclaim, like the Steve Javies. I never went to the United Center and wanted to see Steve Javie referee. You know, all these guys here just want to be seen, Jeff. I'll say no shot to that.
Yeah, and no, because, Tyler, it involved the Orioles. I did not see it, nor did anyone else in the nation except for those Yankees fans that were watching the game. Yeah, I would say probably no shot. I mean, Joe West is best known for trying to get the Gibsons before the kitchen closed on those White Sox games he'd work back in the 2000s. So any call that he could make to speed things up, he would do. I would think probably anything that Joe West has done is more egregious than that.
Ball boy, see if the kitchen's open late. I want to see.
Call in my order.
Keep it warm. Go ahead, Tyler.
All right, I can't leave you, Hoodie, without a little bit of college football and shot or no shot today.
So Illinois. All right, go ahead, Tyler.
Go to the SEC, where we've got a great matchup between Florida and Bama in the swamp. And kind of like here in Chicago, there's a bit of a quarterback conundrum down in Gainesville right now with Anthony Richardson and Emory Jones. For those who haven't watched, Anthony Richardson is reeling off 50-yard play after 50-yard play after 50-yard play. Yeah. Shot or no shot, if Anthony Richardson is the starting quarterback for Florida, he gives them a legitimate shot to pick up a home win against Alabama.
That's a no shot because hell comes to breakfast when you take on Alabama. He's never going to see a defensive line like Alabama, without question. I don't see this game actually being close. I've not seen the number on this. Have you seen the spread on this?
I believe it's 14.
That tells you all you have to know. No. Yeah, no shot.
That's a no shot, Jeff.
No. No one beats Alabama. They are so far and above everyone else in the country. That's a no shot, and I got to scratch off my Brett Bielema notes right here. I thought that was coming.
All right.
Shot,
we'll have a Bielema segment later.
We will.
Yes, we will.
It's been resurrected.
Yes. You will have a Bielema segment later on. Nice job against Virginia. All right. So
the Hoos.
All right, Tyler, go ahead.
So one of the big names now on the NBA trade market is John Wall. They're trying to find a partner for him. Shot or no shot, there is a legit market out there for John Wall.
Well, that's a no shot.
No?
No, I mean, well, I'll put it this way. There shouldn't be.
What's the NBA, though? So there's going to be.
Yeah,
right?
I understand. I just think that we've moved on from, and by the way, this is no shot at the career of John Wall when he's healthy. I'm not sure that there should be. I think you want a younger asset in that spot as a lead guard. He still has some basketball left in him, but I think his best basketballs might be behind him from his days with Washington.
Well, I would agree with that. He's 31. Mm-hmm. He's still due like over $92 million, which is just so NBA, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it is the NBA, and you can trade him. And I think I read the Rockets were interested, right, in John Wall. That's something that's being discussed. So I would say there is going to be a market for John Wall, and he will find some place to play next year.
Yeah. Well, the Rockets are trying to move him.
Right. I mean, they're trying to move him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The Rockets are trying to move. So, yes, they'll find a way. But, boy, he's due. And I know you love the money. The $91.7 million over the next 2 years.
Money.
$91.7 over the next couple
of
years.
I mean,
seasons.
The teams that are going to – the classic take on bad contract teams – I don't think they're going to take on John Wall. Like, you think of the Lakers, they're not going to be able to take on John Wall.
But if they could, they would.
Oh, yeah, they would try. Oh, they're probably trying. They're crunching numbers right now.
Clutch will figure it out. Don't worry. They don't represent him, but just give them a few minutes. They'll figure it out.
Philly? Would Philly get involved with something like this?
With like putting Ben Simmons in the mix?
Yeah. Because that might be the only way financially this thing would work out.
Yeah, you got to get a big contract coming back, too.
Did you know that the movie Wild Hogs is going to have a sequel? Wild Hogs 2, it features LeBron James. John Wall is going to be in it. William H. Macy, Carmelo Anthony, Ray Liotta, John Travolta. I mean, that's what the Lakers are. They are Wild Hogs.
Macy as your power forward. I like that.
No question about that. No question. That's what's happening, JD. There was a movie there with, you said, all these old guys. I think Martin Lawrence was in it. John Travolta.
Wasn't Ben Stiller in that, Wild Hogs?
I believe he might have been.
He was the young guy in that.
Yeah. Marissa Tomei. I mean, that's what the Lakers have become, the Wild Hogs.
Jack Nicholson will be first in line at the theater for that one, too. He'll be sitting courtside.
This is like all the old timers, one more ride. That's what the Lakers are. They might as well bring John Wall in if they can work it out. But yeah, because that way you have all the old timers in there for one last run. Poor LeBron. My God. And see, here's where LeBron and Aaron Rodgers are jealous of Tom Brady. Tom Brady goes to this moribund franchise, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And we're thinking, there's no way, right? I mean, what? I mean, Tampa of all places? You got your head coach that loves a little sip of Crown Royal every now and then, which I don't have a problem with. That's great. But, I mean, here's the difference, right? Aaron looks at Tom Brady and says, man, you were able to get the running back you want, the wide receiver you want. You got Gronk back. You win a Super Bowl. And LeBron looks at it the same way. He's like, man, if I could just put my team together, we could win a championship. That's not happening. It doesn't work that way, right?
LeBron's team is like, you know, stuck in the early 2000s. That's the problem there, right?
Come on, Melo.
Like, come on, Melo.
I mean, all these old-timers, like, this is not going to work. Good Lord, it's Wild Hogs, William H. Macy. Jeez. All right, Tyler, what else do you have?
That is all we have today.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. That's all he's got. Well, we will hear from Dan Wiederer coming up next as we have our conversation about the Bears and try to figure out what's the next step. Can they get their first W of the season on Sunday against Cincinnati? We'll talk to Dan about that and more. JD's in for Cap. It's the Cap and J-Hood Morning Show.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Mornings between 7 and 10 here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. With JD in for Cap, I'm Jonathan Hood. We've got Tyler, we've got Jeff Meller on the other side of the glass. Thanks so much for being with us. You could watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000. Dan Wiederer covers the Bears like a blanket. Our guy from ESPN 1000 joins us here as we talk Bears, as we get ready for the Bears and the Bengals. Hello, Dan.
Fellas, how are you?
Oh, fine. And I know this is going to be a great hit for you. There's no cap, so I'm sure you're in a lawn chair with your feet up. Happy to talk to us.
No cap and JD. It's like a double upgrade.
Well, I thought for fun I would ask my first question as cap.
I like it.
Shot or no shot, is that a good idea?
Take that shot. That's a great idea.
Okay.
Well, let's jump in on our question that we've asked this morning, Dan. What troubles you most if you're a Bears fan? Is it the defensive issues that we saw in week one, or is it the offense?
Well, this is going to lead into a mystery that I'm going to ask you guys to help me solve before this call is over. But without question, to me, it's the defense. That was highly disappointing. What happened Sunday night? You look at, I know JD mentioned it in the last segment, that Matthew Stafford's 156.1 rating was off the charts in a number of different ways. You take out their two kneel down possessions, the Rams' two kneel down possessions at the end of each half, and they averaged 8.7 yards per play, guys. That's miserable. And then worst thing about it is the Bears actually got to halftime within reach, right? It wasn't a great first half. And then you're thinking, okay, it's 13-7. We're still just kind of hanging around. All we need is for our defense to keep us around in this. And then what happened in the second half? This is the Rams drive chart in the second half. Touchdown, 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 victory formation. No good.
Dan, it's September 16th, 8:23 a.m. Yes or no, and there's no in-between. Will Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy be back next year? And you got to answer the question.
And George McCaskey's on the phone, and he says, hey, man, should I keep these guys?
And I had lunch with George last week, and he's very much on the fence, Dan. Which one's it going to be?
Look, so this is where the whole conversation becomes a little bit more complicated, right? Because all of a sudden, that loss Sunday, to me, felt like more than just a week one loss in terms of the reaction that it created in the city, right? There's been a lot of ire. There's been a lot of anger in the city the last few days, and I think a lot of people just feel like this is a continuation of what they've experienced the last few years, and they're just exhausted and they're fed up and they see no way to get out of this tailspin without turning the show over to Justin Fields, the only guy on the roster that seems like a savior in any way, shape, or form. And so this is where it gets really, really complicated for Matt and Ryan, because if you come home on Sunday and you lose a losable game, this is certainly a winnable game on Sunday, but if you lose a losable game to the Bengals, you're staring down the barrel at 0-3 with a trip to Cleveland next week. And all of a sudden, everything that you talked about in the offseason, all the progress, all of the strides, all of the collaboration seems like it's gone for nothing. And you're staring at 14 more games of just people feeling at wit's end, right? And I don't think this city can handle another season where they're constantly at wit's end.
What do you glean from Allen Robinson's agent about how there's 16 more weeks left?
Yeah, so in Brandon Parker's defense, what he was trying to communicate is that you shouldn't overreact to a game that, you know, the offense actually played fairly well overall. Look, the point total is never going to be acceptable, but you go back through that game video and you see an offense that never went 3-and-out, which was not the case a year ago. You saw an offense that moved the ball consistently, just never really found ways to stretch the field. And you understand that first test was an unfair first test for a Bears offense that's a work in progress. They're going to have a lot easier tests ahead of them, including Sunday against a Bengals defense that plays a lot of one-high safety, challenges you with man coverage, and you're going to be able to stretch the field. I think that it was certainly read as, uh-oh, we're trying to find our escape hatch out of Chicago and get Allen out of here as soon as possible to get him to an organization that can support him and pay him and reward him and help him win. But I do know that wasn't the intent of his response to my tweet, which was for three-word reviews. And, guys, if you want to entertain yourself today, go find that original tweet asking for three-word reviews of Sunday's games. I think there were over 800 responses, and some of them will make your belly laugh pretty good.
Cap is gone, so that's good. So we're back now. Normal programming here on ESPN.
Good.
The Cap and Jay Hood Show with Dan Wiederer. You know, Weeds, back to your point originally, if they get to 0-3, and I agree with you. I mean, it's a winnable game this weekend, but if you're Joe Burrow, how can you not be pumped up to face this defense after watching what they did against the Rams? If they get to 0-3, can they continue to go with Dalton, or are they going to scrap this thing entirely?
I don't know what the point would be at that point, right? And it's just every time that Justin Fields gets out on the field, he seems like the stage is not too big for him, that he brings an electricity to the offense. You heard David Montgomery, JD, in the postgame on Sunday night just talking about the aura, right, and the vibe that Justin Fields brings when he's on the field. That stuff becomes infectious. That's the type of thing that helps you get that momentum and that belief. Andy positions you to be able to read defenses better. He's not going to make as many youthful mistakes as Justin's going to make when he gets in there. But if you're looking for somebody to generate some excitement, which this franchise is badly in need of, sooner rather than later, you've got to make that switch, particularly when the rookie certainly seems like he's not going to be overwhelmed, right? And that's the issue. And you mentioned Burrow, right? I mean, this guy obviously is not only excited to see the Bears secondary, but he looks around at his receiving core and he sees Ja'Marr Chase over 100 yards in his NFL debut. He sees Tyler Boyd, who's been really good in that offense for several years. He sees T. Higgins. The Bears secondary has its hands full, and they're coming off a performance in which they were miserable on Sunday night in L.A. And so, yeah, you better be careful and not go into this game thinking that, oh, hey, it's just the lowly Bengals and we're at home and we're going to walk out of there with a victory. Otherwise, like you said, they're going to walk out of there with a defeat. They're going to be staring at 0-3, and the whole city is going to be on fire again.
Dan, what was your letter grade for the offensive line against the Rams?
I'd probably go C. I'd probably give them a C. I think, obviously, it doesn't help when you have to use three left tackles in a game.
Sure.
That's never a recipe for success. And I'll get to something on that point in a second. But, they ran the ball pretty well. They obviously had a game plan to get the ball out of Andy's hands as fast as humanly possible because they were a little bit worried about their own offensive line and respectful of what the Rams' pass rush can do to you. I didn't think it was a disaster up front. I'd say C, maybe C minus if you don't want to be as generous.
Weeds, I'm watching Sean Desai sit up there yesterday, and we're both sitting in that room. And I'm thinking to myself, now, what exactly is he supposed to do when one of the highest paid safeties in the NFL plays the way like he played in Eddie Jackson? When Khalil Mack, who's making so much money, ends the game with one assisted tackle? I mean, I would normally, when your team gives up 34 points, it doesn't look good on anyone, including the coordinator. But some of those mistakes that were made Sunday night, I struggle to understand exactly how Sean Desai can be as culpable when you have so many veteran players making those gaffes.
Well, look, the veteran gaffes are inexcusable. But I'll say this, JD, that this defense talked for months, really from May until the end of training camp, about how they were going to change who they were the last couple of years with splash plays, right? The takeaways were going to be back. The sacks were going to be back. You know, the cumulative total of sacks and takeaways in that game Sunday night, one. You got a combined sack from Akeem Hicks and Robert Quinn in the first half. And, oh, by the way, that was a splash play that forced the Rams only punt of the game. And then you took that punt and you marched it down for a touchdown. And so when you get those splash plays, you can flip momentum. You can change the game. They only had one of them. And we talked for 2 years in 2019, and 2020. Yeah, the defense is still solid, but they're not making game-changing plays. They promised us all offseason that the game-changing plays would be back. The takeaway bucket got on the plane from Hallis Hall to LAX over the weekend, right? And then it was not needed. You know, Tony Medlin could have kept it in the truck when it got there. And so, the defensive coordinator has to answer that. He can't answer for guys that don't touch a receiver down when he's on the ground. But that defense was miserable. And here's the problem, JD, is that Sean doesn't have any sort of track record of saying it's going to be fine, right? You're not Vic Fangio and you can say, oh, this was just a one-off. well, this is the only game that you've ever had as a coordinator. And so if there's two, three, four more of those in the next 2 months, all of a sudden guys outside the building, guys inside the building start saying, well, wait a minute, maybe this guy isn't the guy we thought. It's way too early to press that button. I'm a strong believer in what Sean is trying to do, and hopefully he has answers Sunday against the Bengals. But again, you can't just walk out of LA with one splash play the entire night and expect everybody to be happy with it.
Dan, there's one. You had one conundrum. Did you have an issue that you want to address?
Yeah, no. So this is the mystery, and I'm trying to solve it, and maybe you guys can help me sound it out. You guys can be like the True Detective pairing on HBO, right?
Okay.
You can help us get to the bottom of this. You looked at the predictions for Bears-Rams games last week, right? And even on the Sunday night broadcast, it was Rams, right?
Right.
You look at the predictions for what the Bears are for the season, and pretty much anyone who covers this team on a regular basis has them winning 8 games, maybe 9, maybe 7. Mm-hmm. Everyone sort of expects this to be a mediocre team that's going to get exposed by good teams like they did on Sunday. Everyone expected them to lose to the Rams. So what I'm trying to solve is why, with a result that was unsurprising, we all expected the Bears to come into week 2 at 0-1, is everyone in the city so tense and uptight and ready to freak out? And that's the mystery that I'm trying to solve here in the next couple of days. I want to turn it over to you and see what you guys think about that.
It's the way they lost. That's why.
Yeah.
If it would have been a close game, and it would have been a competitive game, if it would have been like, if it would have been like a Bucks Cowboys game, right? The open the season,
yeah,
Thursday
right,
night.
Yeah, right.
I think everyone expected them to lose, but you would have felt better that you saw some progress. I think what you're looking for is progress. And on offense, you had a little bit of it, but then again, you only score 14 points. You turn the ball over in the red zone. You throw the interception. You don't go down the field vertically. And then defensively, it was so much worse than anyone anticipated. That's what I think left such a sour taste in everyone's mouths. Jonathan?
Yes. I would say for brevity, people get tired of watching a beige wall. Because when you see the Bears, it's a beige wall. There is no paint. There's no character to that wall. It's just the same. And so I think that there's the freak out. Of course, we're in a big market, Chicago. You understand that the Bears drive the bus on everything in sports here in this city. But the point is, though, is that when you see the same old, that's what people freak out, Dan. Where it's like, God,
yeah,
can I see something different, at least for once, for God's sakes?
And I'm not saying the freakout is unjustified. I think it's probably perfectly justified. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of it because it feels like it's rooted in a fear that we are going to basically sit through 2019 and 2020 all over again. And there's no trust from the outside of anybody on the inside. And really the only person that anybody on the outside feels like they can rally behind is Justin Fields. And until he's turned loose for more than 10 snaps a game, everybody's going to be kind of on edge. And it's just, it's really interesting, though, because it just felt like I said, it touched a nerve, and it felt like more than just a week one stumble. It felt like this was sort of cumulative on what we've experienced the last couple of years, and that's not good for anybody up at Halas Hall because the firestorm will only get hotter as we go along through the next couple months.
Dan, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Take that! Thanks, fellas.
You
Thanks,
take
pal.
That. It's Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune and our family here at ESPN 1000 with his thoughts on the Bears as they get ready to take on the Bengals. Coming up next, we stay in the NFC North. Issues with Aaron Rodgers. Yes, they're 0-1, but there is a former teammate that says, that guy, you talk about just average. He never takes blame for himself, according to a former teammate. We'll discuss that coming up next. JD is in for Cap. You're listening to the Cap and J Hood Morning Show.
Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and Jay Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bah, 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 bah. And listen to Cap and Jay Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and Jay Hood on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Oh. We'll be tail light to 10, and then it'll be Carmen and Yurko from 10 until 12:30, right into White Sox baseball, right here on Chicago's Home for Sports. With JDN for Cap, I'm Jonathan Hood. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. As you well know, JD, there's always overreaction because we look so forward to the NFL season, right? We look so forward to the season. And you just want to know whether your team is going to win or lose or whether or not the trend is going to be good or not. And I understand that everyone lost in the NFC North, and so there's always this overreaction. I think it's cool. I think it's good for the NFL, right, to have that kind of chatter. I got no problem with that chatter, personally. But Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, was, you know, he's been on the Pat McAfee show, and he was talking about, you know, what was going on and why the team lost, and talked about how he got hit in the nuts, which was uncomfortable for him in the game early. But one of his old teammates, Jermichael Finley, was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, and was talking about Aaron Rodgers, a teammate. He says Rodgers never takes blame for himself, especially in a losing scenario.
He's a quarterback that doesn't never take blame for himself. He's that guy, if I throw the ball to the receiver's got to catch it wherever it's at. He's not a guy, if you go into the film room and he made a bad pass, he's not that guy that's going to raise his hand and say, oh, that's my bad. He's going to make sure the coaches know that that's all on you. I got the ball there, you got to catch the ball. That's the National Football League. Each offseason, you got to work like it's the last season. And I just don't see a work ethic in Aaron Rodgers that I have in previous years. And actually, you can see it right through his helmet. The eyes and the face tells everything of the personality. And I just don't see it, that NFL hunger and just still hungry to go win another championship. I just think it's cliche and talk that guys get up there and say, oh, I want to win a championship. Oh, it sounds good, but I want to see what you do on the field.
Jermichael Finley, mm-hmm, bringing the heat on KJM. What do you think, yeah, of that?
Well, I think there's several things at play here. There's a lot to unpack. I think number one, I can't, you know, vouch for every offseason Aaron Rodgers has had in the past, but Jonathan, I can guarantee you it did not involve traveling around the world with his girlfriend and hosting Jeopardy and holding out from Green Bay and missing the offseason program and the mandatory minicamp. So, yeah, I can't imagine he put the work in, you know, this past offseason that he's put in previous years. Didn't he say, like, Aaron Rodgers, like, this past offseason was all about me finding me, or, like,
yes,
me helping me? Okay, mm-hmm, well, that's fine. But on the other hand, this is where I don't get as worked up about what Jermichael Finley had to say, as true as some of those words were. We've seen this before with Aaron Rodgers. I just think you cannot prematurely write him off. You cannot prematurely craft his demise, because he just has a way of bouncing back. And they're going to I mean, it was a bad loss. It was a goofy deal, you know, having to go to Jacksonville to play the Saints, who are a very good team, even without Drew Brees. Mm-hmm. But now they're going to come home, and they're going to face the Lions on Monday night. Could you script a better bounce-back performance for the Packers than putting 50 on the Lions on Monday night? I think they'll be okay.
Oh, now, hang on a second now. You know Campbell is going to be biting some kneecaps there. 49ers almost lost that ball game. I mean, I know that, I guess in NBA terms, that would be called garbage time. But yet in the NFL, I mean, the way that the Lions rallied, they did fall short, but they got to feel good about that.
Did you see how Jeff Okuda played in that game?
I did.
We're talking about a former top five pick. And it was so awful that his position coach wasn't sure if you should yell at him or hug him. Like, that's bad. Like, when your coach doesn't even know, like, what do I do with this guy? I'm going to light him up. That doesn't work. I'm going to hug him up. That doesn't work. You know what that means? You don't work as a player.
Right.
I mean, listen, I know that there was some rallying late, and I don't want to lose my ankles to Dan Campbell or my kneecaps or anything, him coming after me.
Yes.
But that's still a bad team.
Oh, yeah. No
that's
question.
A bad team.
I will say this about Aaron Rodgers. I just believe that, you know, I'll say this is just a one-off. I think that the Packers, you would think that Rodgers, because he's been out there and has been able to create magic for the Packers for so often, that he'd have better numbers than 15 for 28, good for 133 yards and no touchdowns and a couple interceptions. I'm going to say that's a one-off. I'll say that that's just a bad game, but you are right. The elixir to fix your problems, so what ails you, are the Lions. So I think they'll turn things around. I was surprised at the Saints, by the way. And again, you look at the numbers and you say, that's kind of, you know, the average numbers for Jameis Winston, but he was efficient.
Yeah.
They ran the football well enough. And I'll say this was kind of a – this is a neutral site game being in Jacksonville for New Orleans and Green Bay. So that – now maybe Jameis feels good about that that performance now that he's a starter.
Oh, I'm sure he feels great. But here's the thing about Jameis. He's the ultimate tease. He's just a tease.
Mm-hmm.
He's got so much ability. He can play the game, but then he just makes so many critical errors. Didn't happen in week one. Okay, that was a great start for him.
5 touchdowns.
But, oh, fantastic. But I just, like, long-term, like, okay, like, in the playoffs, you know, winning playoff games, I might say let's slow our roll a little bit with Jameis, just looking at his past history.
That's fair, but he could see now. He had LASIK, you know. You know, he can see. That's the problem. He couldn't see in college. He couldn't see all those other years. Looks like he's able to just see down the field now. How about that? Trying to be a quarterback and not identify the numbers or the colors.
You would think being able to see would be a pretty high priority on the list, right, of a quarterback? I got to be able to see.
My friend JD has found, really, he got the blueprint. He's got the slide rule. He knows exactly what the Bears need for a new stadium. He'll tell you about that coming up next. With Jeff Dickerson, Jonathan Hood with you, you're listening to the Cap and Jay Hood Morning Show.
Cap and Jay Hood. Jay Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
Cap and Jay Hood Morning Show here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. JD is in for Cap. So glad you're with us. 312-332 ESPN is our phone number. JD's got his slide rule, and he's got his blueprint on what the Bears should do for a new stadium. But first, Q on the south side has been holding patiently. Hello, Q.
Hey, Jay Hood. What's going on?
Hey, what's cracking?
Hey, yeah, I just wanted to get my take on the Bears defense and things like that. I think the Bears made a big mistake that they're not looking at is what made Eddie Jackson so good was Anthony Amos. They should have paid that man the money that he wanted because he made Eddie Jackson look good because he could lock down the strong side of the defense at the safe position and play downward stopping the run. That what made Eddie Jackson could do what he wanted to do. They had two young, good safeties, and they chose not to pay that man, and that's where our secondary is so horrible right now. And my second thing is that you can already call Quinn a bust because right now he is robbing and stealing money from the Bears because you see what's going on in Arizona with Anthony Edwards and J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt, they had to double-team J.J. Watt, and you see what Anthony Edwards did, again, 5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles. Brady, Quinn is stealing money from the Bears, and they're not seeing it.
All right, Q, we appreciate the phone call. JD, your thoughts on Anthony Amos?
Well, Adrian Amos was a very good player for the Bears.
Uh-huh.
I think the problem was they couldn't pay them both. They knew they were going to eventually have to pay Eddie Jackson,
yeah.
So they had to make their decision. Now, in hindsight, Adrian Amos, even though he made a lot of money for the Packers, is a pretty darn good steady player, and the Bears could use a pretty darn good steady safety right now. Eddie Jackson is very hit or miss. He has some plays where he looks like a Pro Bowler and other plays where he looks terrible. So they couldn't pay them both. And Robert Quinn, I think at this point we all know it's one of the worst contracts in the NFL. They just have to pray that they can get something out of him. They couldn't cut him this year because of the dead money. This will be his last year in Chicago. And the hope is he can just do something, Jonathan, to maybe even slightly justify the money the Bears gave him.
That's right. Anthony Amos was a wide receiver from Middle Tennessee State.
Anthony Adams, also a great dresser. So yes. We've got several options there.
Great day to be named Anthony on the program.
Apparently.
Anthony Thomas, Anthony Edwards. I don't know who that is, but.
Yes, and Carmelo Anthony. We mentioned him as well.
Chandler Jones had 5 sacks. Anthony Edwards, he was in ER.
Yes, he was. You see that? We put it all together here on Cap and J Hood. That's how that works. You see that, JD? That's
why team effort.
That's why we're a family here.
That's right.
We have no other choice. We work with Cap. Nonetheless, let's talk a little bit about SoFi Stadium. Let's talk about that. Now, I understand you had your ruler and your you had your blueprint out for SoFi Stadium. So this is going to be the new Bears Stadium in Arlington Heights, correct?
I had my calculator. I had my pencil behind my ear. Mm-hmm. I had my blueprints. I'm drawing my plans up, and I'm beep, 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 beep. And I turned around to Ryan Pace. I said, Ryan, about $6 billion. Okay, I need about $6 billion, and we can get this thing done.
It's above my pay grade, Jeff.
No, probably not. I'm sure Ryan would have quite the say over the new stadium that's going to hopefully one day be built for the Bears. It's a really nice stadium. It's in Englewood, so I think it's a better, as far as the location, it's much better than the Coliseum, which is not a great location. You know, Steve Ballmer is talking about building the Clippers' new stadium out there as well.
Sure.
So there's a lot of development. It's on the old Hollywood Park parcel of land. They're building condos. They're building all kind of stuff. There's a water feature, which is pretty cool, at the front of the stadium. It's really well done. It has all the bells and whistles. But it's going to cost you $5 to $6 billion to build something like this. So if you've got the money and you can commit to spending the money, there's no reason that the Bears can't get something similar. I'm not saying it's going to be exactly the same. I kind of feel like the style, the motif, if you will, is very Southern California at SoFi Stadium. I think something in Arlington Heights would be a little different as far as the aesthetic design of it.
So you mean more columns? You say a new stadium would have columns?
I don't know. I think the columns, there could be some columns, but I don't know if... No, you know when you watch House Hunters,
yes,
and they walk in and they go, oh, these columns have got to go, you know?
Yeah.
No one really is into columns right now in 2021. So I think we're going to have House Hunters come in here and tell the Bears, all right, this has got to go. This has got to go. Okay, no more. We got to have granite here. We have to have an open floor design, you know? We got to widen up things.
And then American Pickers will come there and it's just like, hey, man. This old column, how much you want for it?
I want the Property Brothers to build the Bears' new stadium. That's what I want.
Oh.
I want some HGTV stars to have some input in here.
No, would it, you know,
they got to do it better.
Then you know there would be a room with a barn door if that's the case.
Here's your sliding barn door. Okay.
Oh, this is so beautiful. No, it's not.
Yes.
No, it's freaking not.
Here's the outdoor fireplace.
How about no? Everything with a sliding door, like, dude, I understand that that's like your thing,
yeah.
Property Brothers. I understand, but that's not for everybody. That's not how I grew up. I was a sliding barn door. How does that work?
You didn't have a barn door in your house?
No.
In Chicago? No.
No. No. Because I'm not from like rural Iowa. That's
Here's
why.
Here's the distressed wood. Okay, it's a very distressed wood looking thing. So the Bears Stadium is going to be all sliding doors and distressed wood.
Boy, they got a deal on the sliding door guy. They've got a deal.
They probably own that. Hey, those guys own everything, by the way.
Yeah.
I was checking out wallpaper for my powder room, which I redid about a month ago.
Sure.
And those, the Property Brothers have their own brand of wallpaper.
Oh, my God.
They're in everything.
Wallpaper.
Their tentacles are in everything. So you better believe they might get in line to help the Bears build that new stadium.
Okay. Coming up, we'll talk about the Bears. What really bothers you most about the Bears is the defensive woes or the offensive identity? JD and I will tackle that in 2 minutes.